A few years back, my friend Justin Warner from Food Network moved out to South Dakota. He opened a ramen joint, and he is always posting pictures of all the great food he's not only cooking, but eating all over South Dakota. He's always telling me to come visit. And you know, one of the best ways to experience a new place is to eat your way through it. But it's equally important to live your way through it, too. And when you summer in South Dakota, you can fill up on all the lake days, hikes, rides, and small-town strolls that'll leave you with a regained sense of wonder and a hunger to do it all over again. See why there's so much South Dakota, so little time at TravelSouthDakota.com. Hey everyone, today's reheat is my conversation with LeVar Burton, the actor and podcast host. He has a fantastic new podcast, by the way, called Sound Detectives. It's for kids who want to explore the magic and mystery of sound. You can also hear him on the podcast LeVar Burton Reads. As always, if there's an episode from the deep freezer you want us to reheat, send me a note at hello@sporkful.com. Thanks and enjoy. And now, LeVar Burton reads an excerpt from the 1883 cookbook, Practical Housekeeping, a careful compilation of tried and approved recipes. This is a recipe in poem form for Sydney Smith's winter salad.
Two large potatoes passed through kitchen sieve, unwonted softness to the salad give. Of mordant mustard add a single spoon, distrust the condiment which bites too soon. True flavor needs it. And your poet begs the pounded yellow of two well-boiled eggs. Let onion atoms lurk within the bowl and half-suspected animate the whole. And lastly, on the favored compound toss a magic teaspoon of anchovy sauce. Then, though the green turtle fail, though venison's tough, though ham and turkey are not boiled enough, serenely full, the epicure shall say, fate cannot harm me. I have dined today.
Today on The Sporkful, I sit down with longtime Reading Rainbow host LeVar Burton. As you just heard, he can make just about anything he reads sound good. So we'll have more dramatic cookbook reading, and the passages are going to get weird. Plus, we'll hear stories that might surprise even LeVar's most hardcore fans, like the time he bought stolen steaks as a teenager to bring home to his badass mom. And we'll talk about the power of food memories.
I've spent my lifetime as an adult trying to find sausage that tastes like my grandmother's.
By the end of this episode, you're going to know LeVar Burton a lot better. Stick around. This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving. I'm sure it was a bit different, but I hope you managed to connect with people close to you in one way or another and eat some good food in the process. I couldn't even get my hands on a reasonably sized turkey. All the smaller turkeys sold out, so I had a 14-pound turkey for four people, my family of four. But it was nice. It was different. We missed certain parts of our tradition, but it was also nice to be home, just the four of us. I hope it went as well for you. Quick reminder, now Thanksgiving's over, we can look toward the end of the year. I need your New Year's food resolutions. Record a voice memo on your cell phone. Tell me your name, tell me where you're from, and then answer this question. What food do you resolve to eat more of in the new year, and why? Send that voice memo to me at hello@sporkful.com, and you could hear yourself in our year-end spectacular. All right, let's get into it. LeVar Burton first rose to fame in 1977 when he starred in the seminal TV miniseries Roots, based on Alex Haley's novel. He went on to play Geordi LaForge on Star Trek The Next Generation. He was the character with a metal band over his eyes. But these days, LeVar is best known as the longtime host of the PBS kids show Reading Rainbow.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
A few years after Reading Rainbow went off the air, LeVar acquired the assets to the show and did a Kickstarter to create an online virtual library for kids. These days, he hosts a podcast called LeVar Burton Reads, in which he reads his favorite short fiction. He credits his mom for his love of books. She was an English teacher, and in her house, reading was mandatory. She was also a single parent, which meant she couldn't spend hours in the kitchen making dinner. Meals were often pretty basic, but that didn't stop LeVar from developing a real love of food.
I remember one summer I had started working, so I must have been 15, 16. I discovered the guy who would come around once every couple of weeks selling steaks out of the backseat of his car, steaks that had fallen off a truck, right? And that was a great summer.
So tell me the story about the first, So
I went to work. One of my first jobs was working for a man named Bernard Batiste in Sacramento, California. He had a tuxedo store called Mr. B's Formal Wear, 5025 Stockton Boulevard, Sacramento, California. And we rented tuxedos for weddings and proms and formals and the like. And one of the managers there was a guy named Joe Cornish. And Joe was like the ultimate cool hipster in, what was this, 1975? Huge afro, rode a motorcycle, always had a great car, a cool whip. And Joe was connected. I mean, if you wanted anything, Joe could get it for you. And one day, one of Joe's friends, the guy with the steaks, you know, came in the shop. and that was my introduction to the finer things in life that you didn't get in a store.
Right.
Right.
And did you buy steaks then?
Of course. Steaks, lobster, yeah, you name it. Absolutely.
And did you bring it home?
Of course.
And when you walked in the door with a bunch of steaks and lobster, what did your mom say?
Where did you get these? And I told her, from a guy. They fell off a truck. She was like, let's do it. Steak and lobster for dinner. Tonight and tomorrow, right? Well, my mom's from Kansas City, okay? She wanted to raise her kids right, but she was certainly no stranger to vice. You know what I mean? No stranger at all, my mom.
Like what?
My mother graduated from college at the age of 17 and was my grandfather's bookkeeper. You know, my mom carried a pistol from the time she was 15, 16. My mom's always had a gun, always known how to use it.
Did you ever see her use it?
I never saw her use it, but I was familiar with all of her guns. She used to have a Ruger, a German Ruger, which was really, it was a cool pistol. I remember I got in big trouble because I snuck it out of her purse once to show my friends at school. That wasn't such a smart move on my part, showing up at St. Anne's Catholic Elementary School with a freaking German Ruger. The nuns didn't like that too much.
No. Well, I guess better that you did that however many decades ago that was than today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Are there certain recipes of your mom's that you especially remember or have fondness for?
By her own admission, my mom's not a great cook. I think my favorite dish from my childhood was my mom's shrimp fried rice. My mom tried to serve me beef tongue once and passed it off as roast beef, but I wasn't going for the okey-doke. Those bumps stood out. I knew this was some other part of the cow.
Right.
This was not roast beef.
It's funny because my 6.5-year-old loves tongue.
Really?
But I don't think that she understands that it's actually a tongue.
Yeah, right.
And there's going to be a reckoning when she when she does.
I was, I think, in the fifth grade. I was an altar boy. I had come home from serving an evening mass and was very excited because she said roast beef sandwiches were for dinner. And I got into mine and was like, ooh. And my mom's not really the sort of person you question, you know? She was a working mom. So when she came home and made dinner, you know, that was effort that, you know, you needed to respect.
Especially if you didn't bring up a bag full of steaks and lobster.
That came much later, right? That came much later.
Are there foods that you eat now that kind of connect you to your childhood? Are there either foods you eat in a restaurant or foods that recipes of your mom's that you recreate?
I'm a big fan of a nice PB&J. And, you know, that takes me back to my childhood.
What's your PB&J strategy? How do you layer the peanut butter and jelly?
First, edge to edge with the peanut butter, always creamy, never chunky. And then glop the strawberry preserves, which is my favorite, with seeds and smooth it out. All on the same piece of bread, not peanut butter on one and jelly on the other. Peanut butter is the first layer, then jelly, and then a piece of bread on top.
Interesting. Why not spread onto each piece of bread?
I think that's wrong. I have a fundamental issue with that.
Why? What's the issue?
The issue is that then you have to try and put the two halves together, and you're gonna lose something in that transfer. You're gonna glop. Something's gonna glop. Something's gonna spill.
Peanut butter would stick to the bread for that split second.
Yeah, but the jelly.
But if you leave the jelly laid flat,
and then you lift the peanut butter and put it down
on the jelly.
Dan Pashman, this is a revelation to me. You may have just altered my life.
Well, Lavar, seeing as you've done that for so many others, now we're even. one more PB&J tip I'll give you.
Okay.
I actually recommend jelly on both sides, peanut butter in the middle.
Wow.
Yeah, because
but how does it spread well when you've got jelly already on the bread?
Well, I don't like that much jelly, and if you're gonna do jelly on both sides, you're gonna do half. Yeah. I'm not saying double jelly. Half and half. So it's a thin spread of jelly on each side, so it's not gonna fall off or glop off.
I get you. I left out one detail.
Oh, please.
Heavy on the jelly. I'm a heavy on the jelly guy.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So my system may not work quite as well.
Well, maybe not. But
for you.
But I love the taste of peanut butter, and I love the taste of jelly at the same time.
When people diss peanut butter and jelly as being like a kid's thing, it really bothers me because it's still one of my favorite sandwiches. It's one of the greatest sandwiches in
ever.
The world.
Yeah. My wife doesn't eat. She will never eat. She calls peanut butter and jelly peasant food. But I think more than anything else, it's a texture thing for her. Mm. She has texture issues. So the texture of peanut butter is not to her liking.
Well, that I can understand. But I'd be curious to see if you try for her. Because one of the reasons why I like jelly on top and bottom and peanut butter in the middle is because if you layer it with the jelly on the bottom, then the jelly will hit your tongue sooner, so you'll taste more sweetness. Mm-hmm. But if you have peanut butter so low on the top, then the peanut butter can get stuck in the roof of your mouth. Mm-hmm. So the jelly on the top protects the roof of your mouth. The jelly on the bottom gets the sweetness on your tongue, and then you get the peanut butter in the middle. And so I wonder, you know.
Clearly, you've thought about this.
Some might say too much.
Maybe, but I appreciate a man who really thinks through his PB&J strategies.
Yeah. You did a Reddit AMA, and you said that you love water,
yeah.
Lavar. How do you like your water?
Chilled. I drink water all day, every day.
Okay.
I carry the perfect tool for the job, a thermos, that keeps the ice ice for long periods
of time.
Slow
down with all those technical terms, Lavar.
Well, if you don't have the right tool, your ice will turn to water really rapidly. And then you have warm water after a time. But I like my water chilled.
Is it ever too cold for you?
Never. It can never be too cold. Water can never be too cold. Now, I don't always drink water cold. When I'm eating, I drink at room temperature, especially if I'm eating something that tends to be a little greasy because you don't want the coagulation to go on in your throat or in your gullet, right?
Interesting.
Right?
Is that something you learn with, like, voice acting? Because I don't think I've ever put that together.
Experience.
That's deep.
Yeah.
So the cold, if you have a lot of fat lining your esophagus and your stomach, cold water will make it
congeal. Boom.
Right. And now you're like, your insides are coated in grease.
That's not good.
Coming up, Lavar favors us with another reading, this one from the Star Trek cookbook. Plus, he tells us about Sir Patrick Stewart's weird lunches on the Star Trek set. And we'll talk about one of Lavar's favorite children's books, Enemy Pie.
What kind of things are going to go into this enemy pie? Like what, rocks and chewing gum? I mean, what would you put in a pie for your enemy to eat?
That's all coming up. Stick around.
Hope you're hungry, because it's time for some ads.
In the Pashman household, we're already big fans of Tillamook shredded cheese. In fact, I used it in developing many recipes in my cookbook, and now I'm getting into their ice cream. Tillamook ice cream is made with more cream, so you get smooth and dreamy scoops each time. You may not realize it, but this is why a lot of the store-bought ice cream doesn't taste the same as what you get in an ice cream parlor. But with Tillamook, they don't skimp on the cream. These people know dairy, okay? Tillamook makes a great rich vanilla ice cream with real crushed vanilla bean seeds. They have an Oregon strawberry, sweet strawberry ice cream with ripe Oregon strawberry pieces. The one that I really love is the mudslide flavor, smooth chocolate ice cream with a ribbon of rich fudge and chocolatey chips. You want to move the spoon around to get fudgy and chocolatey chips and the ice cream all in the same bite each time, and it's just so, so nice. And like I said, I just trust Tillamook when it comes to dairy. They make over 200 different dairy products, and the brand is farmer-owned and led by dairy experts. Find Tillamook ice cream near you at Tillamook.com. That's TillamooK.com. The weather's warming up. Have you nailed down your summer travel plans yet? I can tell you, we're working on ours and things are booking up, which is why you should be thinking about Norwegian Cruise Line. They have been raising the standards of cruising for more than 55 years. Let me tell you, when you cruise with NCL, you get award-winning specialty restaurants, immersive entertainment, and the most thrilling experiences at sea. Now look, one of the great things about cruises in general is that you can visit and explore all kinds of different destinations, all with the ease of unpacking your bag just once. But Norwegian Cruise Line, they take cruising to another level, and they take food to another level. With no set dining and entertainment times and no formal dress codes, you have the flexibility to design your ideal vacation. They have an incredible variety of truly authentic and fresh dining and bar experiences complemented by exceptional service. Listen to this. There are up to 8 complimentary and 9 specialty dining options per ship and up to 23 bar and lounge options. Come see why NCL's guest first philosophy means exceptional service and unforgettable memories. Book your next vacation at ncl.com. I enjoy a nice glass of wine, but I don't pretend to be an expert in wine. I usually just want a wine that's high quality, delicious, and not too expensive. And to me, that's Bogle Family Vineyards. And here's the thing about Bogle. This is a third-generation, family-owned winery from California that makes exceptional wines for about $10 a bottle. Bogle wines consistently earn Best Buy designations and high ratings from wine enthusiasts. And let me tell you something. The folks at Wine Enthusiast, they drink a lot of wine. They drink a lot of fancy, expensive wine. And yet they still keep giving great ratings to Bogle. And Bogle Vineyards has so many different kinds of wine. Whatever your mood, whatever you're eating, there's a wine for you. They got this great Pinot Grigio that's crisp and fruity, goes well with spicy foods, with fish. They have a classic Chardonnay that's balanced, amazing with a pork tenderloin or butter chicken. I like to take that Chardonnay and do what Jacques Pepin taught me, a couple of ice cubes in your glass of Bogle. If Jacques Pepin says it's okay, then it's okay. And there's the Bogle Pinot Noir, refined and elegant with bright fruit and about as food-friendly as a red wine can be. You're not going to believe it's only $10. Neither will your friends if you tell them. So pick up a few bottles of Bogle wherever you buy your favorite wines. Please drink responsibly. Are you ready for warmer weather? I know I am. But is your wardrobe ready? I just stocked up on spring and summer clothing at Quince. And let me tell you something. I'm feeling great about everything I got. I got a couple of short sleeve button down shirts, polo shirt, some shorts. Everything feels great. It's super high quality. And I can't believe how much stuff I got at a reasonable price. Quince has all the seasonal must-haves, like 100% European linen shirts from $30, performance polos, and versatile flow-knit activewear. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. Whatever you need for the spring and summer, Quince has your back. Upgrade your wardrobe. Go to quince.com/sporkful for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/sporkful to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/sporkful. I just got a very wonderful shipment of goodies from the folks at Reese's. And let me tell you something. These people remain the absolute worldwide leaders in bringing together chocolate and peanut butter. Of course, we know that peanut butter cups remain transcendent. But have you tried the Reese's Sticks? They're wafers with peanut butter in between each wafer, all coated in chocolate. I mean, the combination of sweet chocolate and salty peanut butter just brings people joy, and the folks at Reese's do it better than anyone. So shop Reese's Peanut Butter Cups now at a store near you, found wherever candy is sold. Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. My cookbook, Anything's Possible, is out now. You can buy it wherever books are sold. You can even get signed copies and signed copies with a pasta gift set. All the info is at sporkful.com/book. Our Sporkful Live Anything's Possible tour is heading to the West Coast. In just 2 weeks, I'll be in the Bay Area for a live show in conversation with Vibe Check Sam Sanders, with special appearances by the Anything's Possible photo team and recipe developer Asha Loopy, a.k.a. the Saucy Spicetress. Then Seattle with Lindy West and L.A. with comedian Andy Richter. Get tickets and info at sporkful.com/tour. See you there. Now, back to LeVar Burton. As I said, he was in Star Trek The Next Generation, so asking him to read this passage was kind of a no-brainer.
This one's from the Star Trek cookbook. It's for Borg tricorder pie. Take 10 spent tricorders and crush them with a Procto hammer. Add half-quart plasma oil, stir. Mix in 1 pound of Class 4 Pro Buckling, 1 minced nacelle discharge socket, and some finely chopped bioneural gel pack casing. Bake for 3 hours in a destabilized HypoShield convex warp container and serve on a bed of transporter room console siding.
My mouth's watering.
Yes. as well it should be.
In Star Trek, LeVar starred alongside Sir Patrick Stewart as Lieutenant Commander Geordi LaForge. Geordi was blind, but he gained the ability to see thanks to a metal band over his eyes that ran from ear to ear. It was called a visor.
When I put the visor on, I lost about 80% of my vision, and which was ironic because I was playing a blind man who could see more than everybody else.
Right.
So I couldn't see my feet, which made navigating a challenge. And I had to learn how to walk around without that reference of knowing where my feet were. Because Geordi was the chief engineer, so it was really important to me that he moved with alacrity and confidence. And so I couldn't be halting in my step or stride at all. So,
did you ever eat with the visor on?
Boy, I must have. But not like a full meal, like, you know, just going to the craft service table and grabbing a grape or something like that. It's not the sort of thing you would want to sit and do a meal in.
Right. I just wonder because... It's one of the, you know, they say that like the way that a blind person may have better hearing.
Right.
You know, when one sense is deprived,
yeah,
others are enhanced. So right. I wonder if wearing the visor would somehow enhance the food, the eating experience in some way or detract from it.
No, it didn't enhance it in any way that I was able to discern.
And I get the impression that like that you and the rest of the cast members, you guys were a tight-knit group on that show.
Still are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys eat together?
We do all the time.
Yeah?
Yeah, all the time.
Any personal favorites of cast members? Personal favorite foods?
Patrick used to eat the weirdest things. He would like go to his trailer and make an apple and onion sandwich. Now, that must be a British thing. Is that a British thing, Dan Pashman? Or is that just a Patrick Stewart thing?
I lived in London, and I don't remember ever having that. I'm going to Google it now.
Yeah, apple and onion sandwiches, which I just thought was just wacky.
Well, Epicurious has a recipe for toasted Gruyere, golden onion, and apple sandwiches.
Well, there you go. All right.
If you cook the onion, then I could get behind that.
I don't know if he was cooking the onion or not.
This is caramelized onions.
That's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Well, that I can see that.
Yeah. But if you're talking raw onions, that's...
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. That's Patrick, though.
For the record, I did tweet Patrick Stewart to ask him if the onions were raw or cooked. I'm still awaiting a response. Sir Patrick, if you're out there, tweet me. I did hear from a listener named Dana in St. Louis who says she has a great recipe for an apple and raw onion sandwich. It also includes ham, mustard, and apple butter. Apparently, it's in the Twilight cookbook. Man, this episode just keeps getting weirder. Anyway, back to LeVar. He is beloved for his role in Star Trek. He still goes to some of the fan conventions, although he says he's never had Romulan ale. But when he walks down the street, you can bet most of the people who come up to him love him because of the PBS kids show Reading Rainbow. LeVar hosted Reading Rainbow for more than 20 years, from 1983 to 2006. Before we talked, I rewatched some old episodes. I also watched a bit where you ran over eagerly to an ice cream cart and you ordered an ice cream cone and you took one lick of the ice cream cone and the scoop of ice cream fell off the cone and landed on your shoe.
Uh-huh.
And then it was quick cut to a close-up of your face and it said, "How does LeVar feel?" I think it was related to like a segment about feelings.
Ah. Really?
Yeah. And I wondered if you've been scarred at some point in your life from the traumatic experience of dropping ice cream.
And who hasn't? I'm not alone in that.
Right, right. Is there a specific recollection that you have of that ever happening to you, maybe as a kid?
Yeah, yeah, and more than once. It wasn't always ice cream. Sometimes it was a popsicle. I used to love missiles, you know? And on really hot days, I grew up in Sacramento, California. So in the summer, it gets like 110, 112 for days running. And you got to be quick. Otherwise, it's going to melt.
Was it missiles or rockets? It's a rocket, right?
Well, I think it's a missile on the West Coast. It's a rocket on the East.
Oh, regional difference.
Yeah.
So if your missile was melting too quickly and a big chunk of it or most of it fell on the ground, would your mom get you another one?
No. You get one shot. and by that time, the ice cream man was gone. You know? So you really had to pay attention.
Right.
Otherwise, you were, as my mother would say, SOL.
When you got older and had your own kids and they dropped their missile or rocket, would you buy them a new one?
Yeah, because... Because we've spoiled millennials. We've given them everything they want and then some.
Right. Well, but isn't that partly your fault, LeVar? I mean, you raised almost all the millennials.
I own my part in it. But yeah, it's just...
I think they're turning out okay anyway.
They are, actually. They are.
Of the many children's books LeVar has read over the years, he says his favorite is one called Enemy Pie. It begins with a boy who's looking forward to a great summer. Actress Cameron Manheim reads an excerpt.
It was all good until Jeremy Ross moved into the neighborhood, right next door to my best friend Stanley. I did not like Jeremy Ross. He laughed at me when he struck me out at the baseball game. He had a party on his trampoline. I wasn't even invited, but my best friend Stanley was. Jeremy Ross was the one and only person on my enemy list.
And his dad resolves to help him with his enemy problem by making enemy pie. And the kid is just curious as to what kind of things are going to go into this enemy pie, like what rocks and chewing gum. I mean, what would you put in a pie for your enemy to eat? The dad says, I'll make the pie. You have one job today. You have to go and spend the entire day with your enemy while I make this pie.
You have to gain his trust before you can get him to eat the pie.
Right. And so... By the end of the story, when it's time to eat the pie and the pie looks good and smells good and finally the dad cuts it and serves it and the kid is like, no, don't eat the pie because, you know, we've become friends.
Well, if it's so bad, Jeremy asked, then why has your dad already eaten half of it? Well, I turned to look at my dad. Sure enough, he was eating enemy pie. Good stuff, he mumbled through a mouthful, and that was all he said. And I sat there watching him eating enemy pie for a few seconds. Dad was laughing, Jeremy was happily eating, and neither of them was losing any hair. It seemed safe enough. So I took a tiny taste. Enemy pie was delicious. I still don't know how to make it. I still wonder if enemies really do hate it, or if their hair falls out, or their breath turns bad. I don't know if I'll ever get an answer, because I just lost my best enemy.
What is it about the story of Enemy Pie that resonates with you so much?
Well, I love the ingenuity of the dad in using food to help his son out of what is clearly a traumatic event. And I think that the link is pretty well forged in between human beings, our emotions, and what we eat. And food can be a powerful emotional trigger. You know, for me, going to Kansas City and visiting my grandparents and for a long time, they had a farm in the country. And my grandmother made her own sausage, which was a combination of the pork and the beef that they raised. And my grandmother's, just the taste of my grandmother's sausage is, I've spent my lifetime as an adult trying to find sausage that tastes like my grandmother's. You know what I mean? And it just even thinking about it evokes such warmth for me and fondness for this woman that I loved, who was the quintessential nurturer. She was the essence of nurturing.
Have you found anything that comes close?
I've found in one or two country kitchens something similar, but not it exactly. And I don't think I ever will.
That's LeVar Burton. His podcast is called LeVar Burton Reads. In it, he reads short fiction from a wide range of genres. It's really great. Get it now wherever you got this podcast. And while you're checking that out, make sure you connect with The Sporkful. You can do it right now while you're listening. If you're listening in Spotify, click follow. In Stitcher, favorite. In Apple Podcasts, hit subscribe. Thanks. Remember that I want to hear your New Year's food resolutions. Record a voice memo on your cell phone. Tell me your name, tell me where you're from, and tell me what food you resolve to eat more of in the new year and why. Send it to me at hello@sporkful.com. This show is produced by Ann Sanny and me. Dan Charles was our editor. Engineering help from Jared O'Connell. Music help from Black Label Music. These days, The Sporkful is produced by Emma Morgenstern, Andre Sohara, and Tamika Weatherspoon. Special thanks to our pal Helen Rosner from The New Yorker, who found that 1883 cookbook for LeVar to read. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher. Our executive producers are Peter Clowney and Daisy Rosario. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And this is Carrie Duggan.
And Sarah Jamison.
From Alexandria, Virginia.
Reminding you to eat more.
Eat better.
And eat more better.
The team that produces The Sporkful today includes me, along with managing producer
Emma Morgenstern
and senior producer
Andres O'Hara.
Our engineer is
Jared O'Connell.
The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher Studios. Our executive producers are Nora Ritchie and Colin Anderson. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.